JC2S, Part 2.
Number 1B.
So we want to see, therefore, we're not a theology of vicarious salvation. I think we know that. I think we ourselves certainly begin to realize that because we have been students of the textbook, and we are beginning to understand that there's something about that textbook which is called science, and that we have to get through science and understanding. And therefore, I think quite a while ago we gave up that feeling. We hope Jesus did it for us. And that's the role of the textbook then. It comes at the point, back to the one book, Lisa. It comes at that point of truth. And it's very important to see then that, as I said, we don't jump then from the tone of life. We don't jump then from the point of life into love. We must go through truth. Through, therefore, the textbook, which is truth's volume. And Mrs. Eddy said, though Jesus was a natural divine scientist, to one born of the flesh, it has to be a discovery. How do we discover it? Well, we discover it through science and understanding. She gives then an indication in there, which also follows the definition for science, that science is a method which includes trustworthy methods for the discovery of new truths within its own domain. So science is the method by which we discover new truths which are already within the domain of God. So science is the method by which we discover the truth that we are that divine infinite calculus ourselves. It's the method. That's why we can't jump from the 5th to the 7,000 year period. We must go through the age of truth, which is science. And that age of science gives us the method by which we too can say, we are the city. We are that city four square. That's what the 16th chapter of the Apocalypse ends us out by saying. Ye are the city. You are that city four square in your consciousness. But to do that, the textbook through its 16 chapters, step by step, enables us to discover. Discovery, as Mrs. Eddy shows us, means a step-by-step process. We step-by-step discover something. It isn't, as she shows, there's a difference between revelation. That comes suddenly. The influx suddenly comes upon our consciousness. But a discoverer discovers it step by step. It unfolds the petals until we have the full identity appear. So the method that is the Christ today, because science is the Christ today, that method is the Christ. Jesus isn't any longer the Christ. The individual Savior we know isn't the Christ, but science is the Christ. And that science enables us to discover new truths, but within the domain of being, we're discovering what we already are. That's what's so wonderful. It isn't that through the Bible and the textbook, we make ourselves the Son of God. We know we are the Son of God. And now through science, we discover it. It gives us the method to see something which has always existed, but which has not previously been perceived. That's why Mrs. Eddy says, science reveals many times. Never God reveals in the textbook. So science is going to reveal to us that we are that divine infinite calculus. Therefore, even that title, Science and Health, we know that Mrs. Eddy never did anything without it being from God. That title, one feels, we know comes from God through revelation. Science, truth's volume, the 6,000 year period, the method of discovery, and health, consciousness. If we take a look at the ideas which constitute truth, we know so well already from our compendium work. Hold that, Louise. We'll come back to the other. We know then that truth stands for consciousness. That's the whole point of that tonality of truth. Truth is therefore a state of divine consciousness. But look at the place value of the textbook. Why isn't the textbook first, before the Bible? Why wasn't it revealed first, its message? Why is it coming as a 6,000-year period, the second book? Why isn't it the last book of the 7,000-year period? We see then, because it's at that point of science, which is at the point of truth, but it's at that point of consciousness also. Not only science, but also divine consciousness. And we see that it's at the sixth stage, because all that the Bible has presented to us is the truth. That has given us that divine consciousness. So the Bible and the textbook go together. We can't have one without the other. Mrs. Eddy says in Prose Works that students who strictly adhere to the right and make the Bible and science and health a study are in no danger of mistaking their way. And we see that it's in an order. It's one book. We begin with the Bible and we go on to the textbook. Because if the textbook stands for truth, we've already learned in our work with the synonymous terms that truth is sixth. And that when they asked Jesus, what is truth? He didn't say what truth was, did he? Because he said, how can I explain to you that truth is built on a whole process from mind to spirit to soul to principle to life to truth, which is within the realm of love. So truth is everything we have learned in the first 1,000-year period in the biblical history under mind tone, everything we learned in the second 1,000-year period under spirit, everything we learned in the Bible under the third 1,000-year period of soul, everything we learned in the 4,000-year period of principle, everything we've learned in the 5,000-year period of life, that's the truth. And that constitutes divine consciousness. Now the textbook, therefore, is, as we see, the one book diagram again, that the title then, Science and Health, Science and Consciousness. See, that constitutes consciousness. That constitutes the ideal man. She could have said Science and the Ideal Man. She did, didn't she? She did write a book to begin with called Science of Man, or And Man, of Man, I think. And that became recapitulation in the textbook. She could have said that. It would have maintained the tonality. Science and the Ideal Man. Science and the Ideal Healthy Whole Man. Or Science and the Ideal Healthy Whole Consciousness. But she chose Science and Health because science means wholeness, means gestalt, science of that holistic man, science of the holistic consciousness. So, therefore, the textbook has within itself two points it wants to get across. One, science, and the other, consciousness. And Mrs. Eddy says that science and consciousness are now at work according to the economy of being. So therefore we see that she has science and consciousness are now at work. And therefore through science we are presented by the method of science, reducing that infinite one principle, which Jesus left no rule or principle for his method of practice. But Mrs. Eddy says the purpose of the textbook now is to give the principle and rule behind his life, and therefore to give the science behind his life, and then through the method of science reduce that principle to the nature of principle we know as category one, the seven synonymous terms for God. We know category two, how that nature of God operates as a self-operating, self-regulating, error-preventing, error-correcting, divinely cybernetic system as Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. And then category three, how that nature of God operates on the different levels of consciousness, giving us then the model of being, the model of science, what reality is. So science will always answer the question, what is reality? And certainly the textbook has given us the key to reality. It's with that key that John Dorley unlocked the Bible and could unlock the four Gospels. It was from a consciousness of the 6,000-year period that unlocked the first, second, third, fourth, fifth periods in the Bible. So Dorley, because he had his foundation on the textbook and went into the textbook and ascertain the meaning of the nature of God as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, as revealed to Mrs. Eddy through the capitalized terms of the nature of God in the textbook, giving us what mind means, what spirit means, what soul, principle, life, truth, and love mean, as capitalized terms, as divinely defined. He found that out, we know, through his work in the textbook, as given to us, for example, in Kapler's work on the compendiums. He found, therefore, also through the textbook, the next category of the capitalized terms, the meaning of word, Christ, Christianity, and science is defined in the textbook. And then the levels of science itself, divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science. That consciousness, see, he had science, but because he went over that science and found out what is reality, but just didn't leave it as an intellectual discipline. But he also said, this is reality. This is reality of the capitalized terms. But he asked the next big question that the textbook answers. How do I become one with that reality? Not only what is reality, science says so, but how do I become one with that reality? That's consciousness. So we have science, what is reality, and consciousness, how do I become one with that reality? So the textbook has the blending of the letter and the spirit, just in the title, science and health, science and consciousness. And so we remember we're always at work with both, don't we? We always know that we are at work in science, asking what is reality. When we ask that question, it's a scientist in us. We roll up our sleeves and we get after text interpretation. We get after learning the synonymous terms in their letter and tonality. That's the scientist in us. But the consciousness part in us asks, how do I become one with what I have learned as the exact letter? How can I build that as tonality? How can that, what God is, as in its nature and in its operation on the levels, how does that become the tone of my consciousness? And once it becomes the tone of my consciousness, I know it's going to become my very own being. So through the aid of science and consciousness, we enter into the 7,000-year period where thought accepts the divine infinite calculus. But it is, therefore, that coupling that Dorley had, what is reality, how do I become one with reality, science and consciousness, that through the 6,000-year period, as I said, unlocked the Bible. That is, otherwise it would never have been unlocked. It took this year age of truth to do it. So we see then that this is something which is very precious to us, and we also now, through the 16 chapters in the textbook, know that they are there from prayer to the apocalypse to throw off the old consciousness, to throw off the old man, and the textbook puts on the new consciousness, the consciousness then of divine science. It destroys error. You see, in this period, error is destroyed within consciousness. It destroys erroneous consciousness so that we can enter that 7,000-year period where there is no accuser, there is no error in consciousness. So the textbook has that unique role through the first to the second to the third, all the way up to the 16th chapter then, to debunk mortal consciousness once and forever. You know, that's the role of the two-edged sword of truth, isn't it? To protect the truth and to destroy the error. And so, therefore, this is what the 16 chapters are doing. It protects what we know that we have gained from the Bible, the little seed that we have gained of our identity from the Bible. And now it will destroy everything that wants to hold on to itself, onto us, that is of a physical nature or a mental nature, so that we can enter into that spiritual standpoint. So, with this, we see, then, that the textbook is a textbook, and in its word, in what it is, presenting to us everything that a textbook should. No science is without a textbook. It has to have one. Now, we all love this booklet, number 5 by Max Kapler, Stately Science Pauses Not, which Kapler Institute gives out as free literature. It's wonderful, isn't it? It's tremendous. And it is something that one can, only touch on briefly now, but I just wanted us to appreciate how he shows then that this is a textbook, and it's a textbook which is here to let us discover what we are as the Son of God already. So I want to spend time before we leave this evening just picking out a few important points. He certainly goes over this whole sense of revelation and discovery, showing to us quite nicely that revelation comes to us suddenly, but a discovery is gradually, a gradual process, and that he shows then on page 3, he says that let us not forget that the song of Christian Science, as Mrs. Eddy said, was work, 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 watch, and pray. That's the scientist in us. That's where he says here that science, which is revealed, must be a discovery. And he repeats Mrs. Eddy saying, to one born of the flesh, however, divine science must be a discovery. And Mrs. Eddy says, he quotes, that mortals must work for the discovery of even a portion of it. It becomes evident that students of Christian Science must have the mentality of a scientific discoverer. As the revelation cannot be fathomed just by reading the text, much more is required. It takes years and years of consecrated devotion, spiritual honesty and humility, coupled with a scientific investigating mentality and willingness for untired work. Let's not forget the song of Christian Science, namely work, 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 watch and pray. Being engaged in the work of discovery, we must muster our best moral, ethical, intellectual, and spiritual abilities. We must be scientists in the true sense of the word and fulfill Mary Baker Eddy's requirement, bear with me the burden of discovery. We are only just beginning to sound the depths of the textbook, and there is a vast undiscovered area still waiting for us. So last year, we knew what it was like to be the scientists trying to dig out the structure, that symphonic structure behind the textbook. Oftentimes we maybe were a bit discouraged that we didn't quite have as much tonality of the synonymous terms as we liked, but that's all right. Being a scientist teaches us tonality, as every subject just polishes and polishes our understanding of the tonality of the synonymous terms. That's the scientist. A scientist also loves it as a textbook. I want to read, therefore, just to reawaken and just appreciate what Max has given to us in this wonderful little booklet. On page 31, he says, is the textbook a scientific textbook? And then he says, what can one expect from a textbook? He says, we may first ask ourselves what a textbook is in the proper meaning of the term. As Mary Baker Eddy called Science and Health a textbook, we should ask ourselves whether it comes up to the accepted meaning of a textbook. So he says, what are the criteria for calling a book a textbook? Have we considered this question at all in our study? He says, if one wants to define something, it is very often quite a help first to ask what it is not. He says, a textbook is not a reading book. It is not a book to be read and reread continually. Nor is it a collection of isolated truths, unrelated facts, or aphorisms. Nor is it a reference book, though this may sometimes be a side use. A textbook must be a scientific book. Otherwise, it cannot be considered to be a textbook. The question that we must honestly ask ourselves is therefore this. Have we studied the textbook as a textbook or merely as a reading and reference book, not knowing what a textbook implies? What then can be expected of a textbook, he goes on. A textbook must present the fundamentals of a science. It must define these fundamentals through the elements of the subject. It must show how the elements are categorized and how these categories are united into a system through definite relationships. This presentation should be shown in an ordered sequence of reasoning, leading thought in a logical order from beginning to end, so that the whole subject is presented in a coherent, systematic way, bringing out its structured wholeness. As Science and Health is a textbook, the whole body of the text should be like a seamless robe, one web of consistency without seam or rent, quoting from Science and Health, all growing out from one root, the divine principle. So he goes on then to show how it is a textbook, and in a textbook extraordinary, really showing in those 16 chapters, therefore, that it is a textbook which presents to us a language of spirit, a language of science, which is a language of spirit, which has, well, we see already what that language of spirit is. When we considered last year the spirit of spirit tone in Science, Theology, and Medicine on page 117, where Mrs. Eddy said concerning the language of spirit, "Ear hath not heard, nor hath lip spoken, the pure language of spirit." This textbook presents a language that we can't find in the world today. It presents a language that's in no other book, any science book. Yes, we know that the physical sciences and the mental sciences are presenting a new language, but that's the surface language. That's the surface structure. That's the way the deep structure appears today in the world, as a surface language. But we see, when we look at the model of being, there are no sentences. There are no words. There are just capitalized terms. Science and Health begins to educate our consciousness through science and its deep structure language of the capitalized terms to be able to go out from this deep structured language. This language is pure. This language is never boring. It will never be obsolete. This deep structured language is the language of God. And it's that language that sends us off into the 8,000-year period. It's that language which lets us leave science, leave symbols for reality itself. It's that language that allows us to go through science and past science into being itself. It's that language that lets us take that last leap into the 8,000-year period. It's a language of only capitalized terms, pure tones. Pure tones of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, operating as the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science on the levels of science itself, divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science. This language, it's the key of David. It's the key that opened the Bible. It's the key that opened the textbook. It's the key that opens up our consciousness into the realm of being. They're keys. We don't need a key that has a lot to it. We need a simple key, a key that we put into the lock that opens up a door into a universe, into a realm, into being, into the eighth day, a realm that doesn't need books, a realm that goes through science and past science into being itself, a realm that goes through the books and past the books into the realm of being itself. That's why, though we needn't look now, but on that diagram I showed that the books come to an end at the end of the 7,000-year period. We no longer need to be taught by books, because those books have just educated our consciousness up to this language of spirit, and this language of spirit, as I say, will send us into the 8,000-year period, where it's just a language of awareness. We can't write books about what the 8,000-year period experiences are. No library would hold them. We just can't do it. We can only experience the 8,000-year period. It can't be written about. So thank goodness we have a language that we can arrive at that gives us that extra into the 8,000-year period. Now, you see, they're keys. Mind is just a key that opens up the realm of mind itself. Spirit is just a key that opens up the realm of spirit itself. Soul is just a key that opens up the realm of soul itself. Principle, life, truth, and love are just keys that open up the realm of principle, life, truth, and love itself. And there we just are, that state of consciousness. So if we, through the surface language, which changes, yes, thank goodness, that as we rise, the symbols become more and more abstract, more and more to the point, more and more closer to the language of what it is we're trying to say. But even that surface language disappears. It disappears at the 6,000-year period. We need no more to talk in sentences. Yes, we could rewrite the textbook in a new language, the language of divine cybernetics, the language of information theory, the language of evolution through paradigm shifts and fluctuation, all to give us a better, higher, more refined sense of what Mrs. Eddy maybe was trying to say and did say. So the language changes and adapts it according to the age. We know that. In the biblical times, they talked in myths. Then they began to talk in legends and sagas. Then they began to talk in tribal history. Then they began to talk a little bit more and more into more mathematical, abstract, more scientific terms of today. And the language will become more and more refined. But we leave even the surface language behind at the 6,000-year period and go on into this language of spirit. So we always remember, however the language is that we're using to help us grasp the language of God. So this language of God is why we call it now the deep structure language. And always remember that that is what we see behind the textbook. That is the language of spirit. So we see then that, as Max is in talking about so nicely, this language of spirit, I want to take a few moments now to present what he says here concerning the language of spirit and how it opens up the textbook.